Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 24th September 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. Well, Mike, I've got to say, it's excellent to be here in the new studio and to be able to look out and see a little bit of the weather and what's happening over Plymouth Sound is a pleasure.
Well, we're going to get straight on with the United Nations General Assembly, who they've just put out a lovely video clip today. Here it is. This September in New York starts tomorrow morning. Now, every year in September, of course, as they say, global leaders and change makers gather together for 2 weeks to discuss the burning issues of our time and set the global agenda for the year ahead. So this is the 73rd session of the UN General Assembly. They're going to have what they call the general debate beginning tomorrow. 115 national leaders turning up for that. And I was just sort of wondering what kinds of things to be talking about. Obviously, war is high on the agenda, or the potential for war. So they claim that they're going to make some kind of statement on peace and peacemaking. They're going to talk about all kinds of stuff, like making the United Nations relevant to all people, global leadership and shared responsibilities for peaceful, equitable and sustainable societies. It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't get a warm feeling.
No, and neither you should, because, of course, last year, Theresa May was at her speech at the UN General Assembly, kicked off the issues that we're having with regard to censorship on the Internet. She was saying for the first time in the UN, governments and industry through the Global Internet Forum for Counterterrorism will be coming together to deal with the issues of extremism on the Internet. And of course, this was her crusade that she launched. But of course, it wasn't her idea originally, although it's her crusade, because David Cameron had launched the policy 2 years previously at the United Nations General Assembly with his famous, those who believe that 9/11 was an inside job speech, if you remember. So we wait to see what she has in mind for this year. Internet censorship is bound to be on the agenda. And this is BuzzFeed News, who claim that they have seen evidence of UK government planning to set up a regulator for the Internet. Now, we've been talking about this for quite some time. We know it's been coming. The headline, if anybody wants to find it, is the UK government is planning to set up a regulator for the Internet. This is an exclusive that BuzzFeed is claiming. They're saying that legislation is being drafted by the Home Office and the Department for Digital Culture, Media and Sport. It's going to be announced at some point during the winter. It's going to create a new regulatory framework for online social harms. It's going to see the establishment of an internet regulator similar to Ofcom, which regulates broadcasters, telecoms and postal communications. Now, the head of Ofcom was saying during the week, last week, that he was very keen to see this type of regulator set up, but he didn't want it coming under the remit of Ofcom itself. We wait to see whether this is going to be handed to Ofcom or whether it'll be a new quango set up for the purpose. BuzzFeed making the point, Brian, that internet regulation was sort of hidden somewhere within the Conservative Party manifesto in the lead up to the last general election. But it's been certainly on the policy radar of Conservative Party leaders for quite a few years, as we've mentioned.
Yes, and the more successful alternative media is, the worse it gets. So what do I see coming for the new year? I see massive clampdown on anybody who's trying to point a finger at the British government or indeed other Western governments. Why should that be? Well, perhaps we get a clue from this article from the Daily Mail. Thank you very much to one of our viewers who alerted us to this one. Here is the headline. Head of anti-corruption at Britain's FBI says he was ordered to halt probe into Russian money laundering by senior foreign office official. And the story here is that this guy, John Benton, he was head of the National Crime Agency International Corruption Division, started to look into money laundering around sums of money connected to Russia. And he says that he was taken to one side and asked to stop the investigation. Now, this didn't happen once. If we get into the story, and some of this comes from the Telegraph. So we've got here, the Telegraph also reported that a short time after the first meeting, the same official again took John Benton to one side at the National Crime Agency and told him, "This guy, Bill Browder, is a real pain. We're not carrying on with the investigation." So John Benton challenged this. At this point, I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "It's closed and we're dealing with it. You are, quote, not to launch a money laundering investigation," unquote. So we've got a National Crime Agency, which is specifically set up to deal with international crime, global crime. But when it starts to get into the murky world of what appears to be Russian money, all of a sudden there's a close down. Now, this story is worth reading in the Mail and the Telegraph and anywhere else you can find, because it leads us somewhere very interesting. Let's bring in Bill Browder. Now, this is the financier who originally stepped forward and said that he had been defrauded of a very large amount of money. And he used a lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, to start the investigations. Magnitsky eventually ended up dying in a Russian prison. Circumstances, many people are saying, is rather strange. But this is what Mr. Bill Browder says about the matter. "It now appears as if there was a deliberate attempt at the highest ranks of the British government to shut down the money laundering investigation in the UK. There needs to be an inquiry in the UK. For some reason, the British government didn't want to take action against Russian gangsters in this country." Now, Mike, this is an interesting statement, because we're back on the subject of the British government not taking action when you would have thought it would be leaping onto the stage, centre stage, to take the action. But this man is also pointing fingers at Russian gangsters. He's not actually pointing a finger at the Russian establishment itself.
Well, well, indeed. But you know, this is a common thread, isn't it? This is the National Crime Agency again. And, of course, this is similar to what happened with the Al Yamama deal with British Aerospace and the Saudi Arabians. Yeah. Whenever there's corruption and we're dealing with gangsters, we shut down the investigation.
We shut down the investigation. This cropped up as one line in this article, and this caught my attention. It said, "The fraud investigated by Magnitsky has led to criminal investigations around Europe, and last week it emerged that Danske Bank, Denmark's largest bank, had laundered 178 billion. Now, we've still got to check through this, but it is quite remarkable that once again, when there seems to be evidence put on the table of massive fraud and corruption or massive child abuse, what do we get from the British government? Well, we get some form of shutdown, close down, as opposed to what most people think should happen, which would be an in-depth investigation. And I thought it would be appropriate to remind our audience today of headlines which we were seeing just a few months ago. So here was The Independent. Theresa May condemned for business as usual after Conservatives accept 100,000 from former Putin ally's wife. Apologies for that. And probably I never thought I would say it, but I had to say that when I looked at this article in The Guardian, we've got Owen Jones. I have to agree with what Owen Jones is actually saying. I know, Mike, you're shocked here. But what this young man's pointing out is that the Tories had just had another 800,000 from so-called Russian sources. This was bringing the total up to about 3 million. And he said, if this was the Labour Party, we would have the whole of the press and media in furore that Corbyn was taking money from the Russians. But the Tories, well, it's nothing to worry about. Just carry on with the game of tennis. Mm. So we'll follow up on this story. But we are certainly beginning to see the picture of the British government a little bit too close to this international money laundering. More in due course.
Well, good news, Brian, because apparently the Department for International Development is going to protect up to 800,000 people who they describe as being in fragile and conflict-affected parts of Africa. by providing families with alternative livelihood opportunities and protecting children from exploitation. So they can't protect children from exploitation in this country, but they're going to go and do that in Africa, no problem. This is Penny Mordaunt, who is at the UN General Assembly today, and she's announcing new protections for vulnerable children. A UK-backed project with UNICEF will provide 400,000 girls and boys in Ethiopia, Somalia and Sudan at risk of slavery from birth. They're going to give them birth registration documents, that's fantastic, and other measures to shelter them from forced labour and underage marriage. So apparently issuing a birth certificate is going to prevent them being kidnapped and pushed into forced slavery. I'm impressed with Penny Mordaunt's attitude here. The UK is going to commit extra support, taking its spending up to $200 million to help create jobs, strengthen law enforcement, and all other kinds of things. Now, of course, these are the conflict areas that UK aid is busy pushing. Well, what are they pushing in those areas? But anyway, this is what Penny had to say. She said, from the clothes we wear to the food we eat, the insidious virus of modern slavery is infiltrating all aspects of our daily life without us even realizing. So there you go. Without us even realizing, Brian, modern slavery is infiltrating all aspects of our lives.
Without us realizing. But unfortunately, we do realize, well, Ms. Mordaunt, we do realize.
Well, unfortunately, we do realize. And of course, one of the things that we realize, that we've shown this before, but we're going to keep showing it until, the message gets across to MPs and so on. Every year, human traffickers make profit from the trade, £130 billion. What difference is £200 million going to make to this? That's profit. 21 million victims worldwide. And as you can see, the majority of them end up in sexual exploitation. It's about time this government was held to account.
Absolutely. I chuckle, Mike, because, of course, we see that every time evidence is put on the table implicating the British government in the cover-up of the abuse of children, trafficking, prostitution, all of the shutters come down. It's too profitable. Mm. The British government clearly enjoys the profit that comes out of these sorts of trades. So let's jump across to the subject of EU military unification. And I'm going to say, back in 2011, the UK column was virtually the only media source that was warning what was going on in the background. And we were identifying that the Franco-British Council was working to build a partnership with the French, which would essentially mean Britain losing control of its own military infrastructure. And we also saw the danger of Britain's nuclear deterrent going under French control. A few people did pay attention to us, but an awful lot didn't. We're now starting to see people at the Westminster end waking up to the fact that this pernicious charity, the Franco-British Council, is still at work. And this has been prompted by their latest defence conference, but we'll come on to that in a few seconds. Let's just have a look at the sort of thing that the Ministry of Defence is tweeting out. The Chief of the Defence Staff, General Sir Nick Carter, and General Lecointre have addressed the Franco-British Council Defence Conference this evening. Watch the video below to learn more about our shared interest, values and histories. And if you go through this very simplistic little video, it's got a very clear message. Here we are. We are to be going for unity as far as military operations go with the French. We are going to be operating together. So there's no doubt that whilst we have the utter lie and sham of Brexit going on, that behind the scenes, Theresa May's duplicitous government is locking us deeper and deeper into the unified EU military structure. And if you're not aware of the Franco-British Council, we encourage you to get onto their website and have a look at what they say. According to them, they promote constructive dialogue between France and the UK for enhanced future collaboration. That's pretty generalised, isn't it?
Who decided we were going to do this?
Well, if you go back, they were set up in the reign of Ted Heath. So there's a lot of history behind where this organisation came from. But as a charity, it's a real political powerhouse. And as we're going to see, the focus is on defence and getting in amongst Britain's political establishment. But if we have a look at some of their own documentation, which is always a good place to start, we can see that they've been talking about the refocusing of their council and an operational base for the development and delivery of the Franco-British Young Leaders Programme. And if we look at this statement here, they're going to concentrate on two things. They're going to concentrate on young leaders and defence. So this is a charity to help French and British people to get on together, to understand each other's culture. And they're going to do that by focusing on leadership, which ultimately is political leadership, and defence.
Young leadership?
Young leadership.
This is like common purpose for anybody interested in defence industry?
This is absolutely what it is, Mike. And we'll give some more details in just a second.
Okay.
Let's go back to their report again. And a key thing with all these organisations is, where does the money come from? Well, we've got the bulk of it here. Until 2015-16, the council was almost exclusively funded by the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. But this is supposed to be a charity. It's supposed to be a charity. It claims to be a charity, but it acts in the political sense, which, as far as I know, is contrary to what charities are supposed to do. And what is it really? It's an arm of the British and French governments. So there we are. A reduction in core funding and the launch of new activities has led the council to restructure. But people can check this out. So there are other people funding it. I couldn't find out easily who they were. Let's come on to the next bit here. So the council supported the Franco-British Defence Conference, which took place. What's it got to say? It says that it brought together 100 participants from military, government, industry and academia research. So this is a charity, but what it's actually doing is promoting defence interests. Let's just highlight that. And then this caught my eye. I thought this was very interesting. The council also assisted the French Chamber of Commerce of Great Britain in planning aspects of the Franco-British Digital Conference, Disrupt or Be Disrupted. Now, we've warned more than many other media outlets about disruptors and these politically trained change agents who are designed to disrupt the workings of the NHS or other national institutions in order to bring in change. And here we've got this charity, you're going to use that word pernicious again, talking or boasting about bringing this sort of technique into the chambers of commerce.
It almost sounds like a threat.
Well, I think it's worse than a threat, Mike, because they're already doing it. Most of the times when you see them saying, you know, we've done this bit, there's a huge block of something else behind it. So if you get into the site itself, this is the sort of thing it talks about, a platform of influence for the Franco-British defence community. Remember, this is a charity, but funded by the government. And this is part of the objectives, to forge new relationships and reinforce mutual understanding between the two countries' defence communities. Bilateral security cooperation after Brexit. So we think we're moving towards leaving the European Union, but behind the scenes, the Foreign and Commonwealth Office is working with this organisation in order to lock us in even deeper. Shared defence culture in respect of Europe and NATO, the setting up of mutual dependency in industrial domains of sovereignty, and the added value of the Franco-British partnership. So they're admitting here, Mike, that we're to be locked in an industrial sense and in a sovereign sense. There's almost no hiding what's really happening. The British public, 17.4 million, are on the sidelines. They think they voted to come out of this lot, but here's the Franco-British Council sneering, while you're all playing over there, we're actually locking the defence infrastructure together. Mm. And this is the conference itself. And again, encourage people to go and have a look at this.
So this was last week.
Yeah, this was last week. And we've got Dominic Grieve, MP, speaking from UK. We've got Jean-Pierre Huet from the Ambassador of France. We've got speeches by the British and French Chiefs of Defence Staff. So we've got General Sir Nicholas Carter and his counterpart in France. A new relationship between defence and security 7 years on from the Lancaster House Treaty. So this isn't being withdrawn due to Brexit. And then it went on to the Thursday. And what I found interesting on the Thursday agenda there, it said this event is supported by the UK and French Ministries of Defence. It's funded by the UK Ministry of Defence, together with generous commercial sponsorship from MBDA. And it says strictly by invitation. Now, I didn't initially pick up on MBDA, but I was interested that they were putting money in for sponsorship, follow the money. So let's have a look at their chief spokesman, which is their chief executive, Anton Bouvier. And he says MBDA is delighted to support events like the Franco-British Defence Conference because, and I'm proud to claim this, we're rightly seen not only as a European defence industry leader, but also as the champion of European industrial cooperation and sovereignty, especially with regard to France and the UK. As a company, MBDA is very proud to be considered the partner of choice. So we've got it again here, Mike. We've got industrial cooperation. This is the bringing together of defence industries and procurement. This is what David Ellis is constantly warning about. And with it, they are talking about the new European sovereignty, which is to include UK. Mm. All of this funded. So here's the company itself. And this is where we get into the meat of it, because this is an amalgamation of key British defence industries like BAE Dynamics and GEC Marconi Radar and Defence with Italian, French and German companies. So this is now a European conglomerate which is in control of the productions of virtually all of Britain's significant missiles. And if we come back to this gentleman again, the key bit here is he says that we need to ensure that all the good that's come to date from the Franco-British industrial cooperation under the Lancaster House Treaty and more generally between the UK and its European partners is not compromised. So you can go and have your little game about leaving under Brexit. General public in UK deceived. They think that Brexit is a possibility. But behind the scenes, this massive defence and industrial military complex supported by public money is doing the opposite. And Mike, to answer the question of your leaders, here's a little bit of their splurge on the new leaders they're creating. If you go to the Facebook page, you can see some of these young lovelies who have been selected to start to be trained in pan-European politics, all supported by the British government. But I found this very significant because we've got a political editor here from Sky News involved. So if they need publicity, it's not a problem. And in the wings, we've got a number of other people keeping an eye. So Carnegie, always good to see what they think is going on because generally they're helping to push the globalist agenda. They're clearly worried in this article. Because it says Europe needs more military cooperation between London and Paris, yet the prospects for significant joint action appear slim. So I'll just end it on this one, really, that the weekend we have had the Leave Means Leave rally. We're going to have a report on that on Wednesday. This young lady was asked about PESCO and EU military integration. She was speaking towards the end. I don't really want to talk on that. I want to concentrate on the question of a second referendum. So some of the people who attended that rally said lots of gloss, razzmatazz, Nigel Farage there, David Davis, But what it seemed to be doing was preparing people for the idea of a second referendum.
Is a sort of joint UK-French defence culture, is that even possible?
I think it's here, Mike. I think it's
but
here.
But in terms of the culture, I mean, okay, things have changed because there's been lots of leadership training since the point when you left the Navy to today. But is it possible to have a combined culture between Britain and France, or are our systems just so completely different that, that it can only ever cause difficulty?
It will cause difficulty, Mike. How they've tried to get around this is by integrating principally the officer level, senior officer level, and integrating the joint command centres. So the people controlling the military action are joint. Troops out on the ground will essentially stay in their national capability, apart from some mixing of advisors and presumably linguists. But does the thing want to operate as a joint force will, or does the British military want to operate as a joint force with the French? I think the average squaddie is going to say, no, we don't. But we know from a number of sources now that senior British military officers seem to be so brainwashed they only think and talk in terms of joint operations with the French or European Union.
Right.
I think it's reframing is the key bit.
Yes. Okay, well, last week, of course, a Russian aircraft was shot down by Syrian air defences. And the Russians over the weekend, Ministry of Defence in Russia gave a briefing on how this took place. And they produced this little video clip to demonstrate it. So if you remember, on the 17th of September last week, a Russian Ilyushin IL-20 with 15 crew on board was circling over Idlib on a reconnaissance mission. Four Israeli F-16 fighters decided to head over to the Syrian coast and bomb. And watching the briefing, what was particularly interesting, and as you can see on screen here, what they're suggesting, and they were suggesting quite strongly, is that the Israeli, or at least one Israeli F-16 flew in such a way as to attempt to make the Ilyushin the target of the Syrian air defences. Now, Russia really quite strong in their condemnation of this over the weekend. Here's Ivor Konashenkov, who's the Russian Ministry of Defense spokesperson, saying, "We believe the blame for the Russian IL-20 aircraft tragedy lies entirely with the Israeli Air Force." They said the Israeli pilot must have been well aware of the fact that the IL-20 has a much larger radar cross-section than his F-16. They suggested, as I say, that he deliberately flew his F-16 in a way to make sure the IL-20 became the target. Something I was a little surprised about here, Brian, one of the things they said was that the Russians and the Syrians using different friend or foe systems. That did surprise me a little bit, because I thought that if you were operating in conjunction with another nation on a battlefield, that you would make sure that your systems were aligned to avoid friendly fire accidents.
Well, you would, and I've got to say that little bit of the report is confusing. But if we say that Syria, to a large extent, has still got systems which are behind Western and clearly now Russian systems, was it hardware they hadn't upgraded, or was it to do with crypto that they hadn't got the same codes as the Russians, and they couldn't have the same codes because they didn't have the encrypted transponders? I don't know, but clearly something happened that shouldn't have happened.
There's been lots of talk about Russia selling three S-300s to Syria. What's interesting about this is that original contract had been signed and the Syrians had paid, I think, $45 million deposit to the Russians for those systems. And then because the Israelis made a complaint about that, the Russians withheld those S-300s. I haven't heard for sure what their attitude is now, but I would imagine that Syria may be getting those in the not too distant future.
Well, and we can be sure that the next thing that's going to happen after the internal inquiry between the Russians and the Syrians is that they're going to produce a better and more coordinated system. Mm. So it's going to be very interesting to watch. Many people, of course, saying that what we are watching is the West creeping towards war with the Russians. And what better title to go for than this Express headline, Prepare for War. But it's not talking about Syria. We've got another one of these almost advert articles, Mike, for UK unveiling military robots to give Britain the edge to destroy its enemies. It's all very emotive language. But what I was fascinated about is it said that some of the technology to do with these robots, presumably we didn't have robots let loose on the streets themselves, but there was a trial in Canada, sorry, let's bring this in on screen, the trial in Canada, which lasted for 3 weeks, and it was the latest in the series of contested urban environment experiments. Now, many people are saying that as we see more and more draconian governments emerge, UK, also the United States, that we're also seeing in the military doctrine more and more talk about having to deal with urban warfare as a result of rebellion on the streets. So I found it fascinating that this little article was admitting that they'd been testing some of this technology Canadian streets.
Well, absolutely. It was Montreal they were testing it on. And correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, but I don't think that this type of thing and this type of scenario for these tests can really be separated from the stated policy of both NATO and the European Union, that we should see a merger between civilian and military functions.
Yeah.
Including policing.
Yeah. So we say that probably the article, the most people seem a little bit like a video game, but if you delve into what's being talked about, deeply sinister, and this stuff is being drifted in without any proper debate in the public arena or in Westminster itself. So who is going to control these robots? We've got David Cameron and Theresa May quite happy to put boots on the ground in Syria with no debate in Westminster. Obviously, the disadvantage with human boots on the ground is people can talk, they can release information and say things that they shouldn't say. A lot easier if you can put robots in there. So is this a private army for Britain's politicians? If it is, we should be very worried. Gavin Williamson featured in this article in a video clip. Now, there was a statement from the Ministry of Defence. Of course, it was anonymous, but obviously it was one of Gavin Williamson's boys. And that person, whoever it was, said it will be a revolutionary addition to Britain's offence capabilities as the system reduces human error and allow soldiers to freely and safely move on the ground. Well, that statement has got to be complete nonsense, because of course the programming for the robots themselves would have ultimately come from a human point of view. But according to the MOD, they're so excited that this is going to reduce human error and make everything easier. What was this little one here? Oh, yes, here we are. So the trial comes less than a week after it's been revealed Britain's military and security services tested a new arsenal of offensive cyber weapons against ISIS. This, in a black sense, might make me laugh, because we're to believe that Britain, we weren't going to do anything nasty in Syria. We weren't going to trial any new weapons. We were only just going to trial cyber weapons and stop ISIS being able to access their bank accounts. That's apparently what we're being told here. And if you're thinking to yourself, some of this is worrying, then the embedded video with Gavin Williamson really says it all. Let's just have a look at that clip.
Please, never, never underestimate my nation. As we have changed the world time and time and time again, and we will change the world in the future. For we as a nation, when we realize that it is in our interest, or when it is right, we as a nation always act.
Mike, we've talked about Theresa May's performance in front of the camera, particularly last week, and said how appalling it was. She's just there reading a script. I watched this little film clip three times because it had a message for me and I couldn't quite pick that message up. And then it took me back to attending a school play, watching my children, other children appear in that play. It was just like the lines delivered in a school play. So the sincerity was wrong, the expressions was wrong, the lines didn't work, but those were the lines, so those were the lines that had to be said. This young man is immensely dangerous. We can laugh at him here, and he deserves to be laughed at, but this is the man who, behind the scenes, is helping to lock Britain into a unified EU military structure, whilst Theresa May and the rest of the government are lying about Brexit. It's very dangerous.
The depressing thing is, Brian, that I believe this is our next Prime Minister.
That isn't it. That's an immensely depressing thought, Mike. Well, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm going to say live and a big thank you to Mike for construction of the new studio. And we look forward to seeing comments from our viewers, and hopefully listeners will be able to see some of the images of the new style UK column in due course. And we'd like to say thank you very much to our long-term supporters and subscribers. If you're new to UK Column, you like what we're doing, you're not a subscriber, please consider taking out that subscription, because we can only do what we do with your financial support. Thanks very much for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.